This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Pablo Marino Franco. Dr. Franco and I are going to talk, about a number of issues, starting with his career and some of his thoughts on healthcare and where he sees trends and more. Dr. Marino Franco, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Thank you very much, Scott, for the kind introduction, and thank you for inviting me. So my name is Pablo Marino Franco, and I am a transplant intensivist at Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville. I also serve in the role of the Chief Quality Officer for Mayo Clinic Florida and some other institutional roles related to quality improvement.
Well, thank you. So being a transplant intensivist, Chief Medical Officer for Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville or in Florida, you know, puts you sort of at the very top of your profession. Just fantastic. Tell us a little bit about your career and how you got there.
Yeah, that's a pretty long story, but definitely we can summarize in a few minutes and give you and our audience the sense of some of the trajectory, some of the highlights and that we've been through. So I'm originally from Panama in Central America. I grew up there and I did my medical training at the University of Panama. And after completing medicine in Panama, I did come to the U.S. I was doing some rotations as a medical student in Jackson Memorial Hospital in Miami. So I started to see a whole different kind of healthcare delivery from what I had, done during training. And that really sparked my interest to say, the training that I should have in the future should be better, and that got me interested on doing my internal medicine residency, which I applied for, and I ended up doing a program, which was a combined program between Rush University and Cook County Hospital in Chicago, and that was a really, phenomenal experience because, 1 month you could be at Cook County Hospital taking care of, very complex, underserved patients who had medical conditions that had gone on for a long period of time unchecked. And then, we had to do so many things to try to help them get out of those situations. But then the next month, you could be at Rush University, a university medical center with a completely different level of technology. And, you could be seeing transplant patients and, very advanced technology. So that gave me a broad spectrum of experiences during my internal medicine training. I did stay an extra year in my residency program as a chief resident. So that was probably one of the most amazing years because not only we were able to deliver care, but also dive really, deep into the learning of medicine and teaching of medicine for graduate medical education groups. So, completing that training in Cook County and Rush, then, I knew I wanted to do critical care as my fellowship. And after looking at, many different options, I had the opportunity to go to Mayo Clinic in Rochester for my critical care training. And I have to admit that I got, so much more than just, than just critical care training when I went to Mayo Clinic. What I'm saying with that is I got to see a whole other layer of healthcare delivery and healthcare design, particularly with the focus on quality improvement. Having been in so many settings for underserved patients and different healthcare delivery systems, I had seen how things shouldn't be, which types of healthcare design were not doing the right thing, for the patients. We're not very well designed. And by, you know, learning about quality improvement tools that have been applied at Mayo Clinic over the years and learning really how to use those quality improvement tools to solve healthcare delivery problems, that really gave me an appreciation for the system, and that system level understanding then has allowed me to, as I moved on with my profession, not only to, you know, deliver care on a one-to-one level in the intensive care unit, but also, you know, look at it from the system perspective. How can you influence the care for so many patients at once to improve their situation?
Well, fantastic. Let me ask you a question. There are in the country just a handful of these very elite systems like Mayo Clinic. You've had background in multiple different health systems. Just take a moment again and help us understand how systems reinforce that greatness, systems, institutions, quality. How do they do that so that they continue to be one of the top institutions in the world every year, decade after decade, year after year? How do they do that? What's the, I know there's not a trick, but what's the core to it?
Very good question, Scott. Everything, it's about the culture at that institution. And the culture, it's something that it's sometimes very spiritual or, you know, it's something you cannot really put your hands around and grasp. But the culture, it's really based on values. So when an institution has spend dedicated time to create values in their staff, that's how you start to shape what that culture is going to look like. So, for example, you know, you may have heard about the motto at Mayo Clinic of the needs of the patient come first. Using that phrase as we communicate with each other is extremely important. To give you an example, when two or, you know, or three different providers are trying to make a complex decision regarding what should be done for a particular patient, a lot of times they're not in agreement. You know, they may have different perspectives of what should be done and, you know, how much is it going to cost and, you know, what benefit is the patient really going to get out of there and what other technologies available and things like that. So because there could be discrepancies in what the options are and what each provider wants to do, a lot of times you're taking a step back and saying, okay, what is the right thing to do for the patient? What meets the patient needs above everything? When you take that step back, when you reframe the conversation with that in mind, then that changes the whole approach of, you know, what is going to be the next best step. And Mayo Clinic in particular has spent quite a bit of time creating a culture of safety, you know, based on what we internally call rich ties, but really it's based on respect, integrity, teamwork, collaboration, holding each other accountable, paying attention to detail. So, you know, there's a number of these values which at Mayo we call our, you know, Mayo Clinic core values. They're essentially the building blocks that allow a culture of safety to flourish and to remain at the center of what we do.
It's really a magnificent thing. You grew up in, to switch subjects for a moment, you grew up in Panama. Many of us that live in the United States, grew up here, are so naive about other cultures, other areas, other lands, other countries. Take a moment and tell us a little bit about Panama, because we'd love to learn a little bit.
Definitely. So Panama, as a, you know, developing country, that, you know, the political situation has been stable over the last few years, but that wasn't the case when I was growing up. And, you know, that really shaped many, you know, differences on for example, the way, you know, healthcare is being delivered. So there are at least, you know, three different tiers of how healthcare can be delivered in Panama. There is a national, you know, health system that applies to every individual, but the technology and the tools and the medications that are available broadly are limited. Then those individuals that, you know, work and contribute through their employers, they can be part of the social security system, and the social security system really works also as a healthcare delivery system, and the benefits and, you know, medications and technologies are a little bit better. And then there is the next layer is more of a private insurance type of hospitals. And, you know, certainly you can get your test results much faster. You can have, you know, MRIs done much faster, and you can have surgical procedures done in a timely manner. So that, you know, really creates a significant gap between the care that individuals can have. You know, I think that, you know, even in the U.S., there is actually some differences on what level of care individuals can have depending on where they are. Ideally, if we really, as a health system, were to focus on, you know, that primary value of the needs of the patient come first, we could restructure the way healthcare is delivered so that if somebody needs a high complexity of care, they could go to a place in which complex care is the specialty, where, you know, the individuals or the technology or the tools are particularly designed to care for complex medical conditions. So what that would require is a complete, you know, redesign of the healthcare delivery system, focusing on the patient at the center and focusing on their needs at the center. And that's something that, you know, I think is definitely, you know, idealistic, but it should be something as a society that we should strive to achieve.
Well, thank you. What a fascinating career you're having. It's not like you've had, you're still a young person, but what a magnificent career. Dr. Marino Franco, tell us for a moment, what are you most proud of in your career? I mean, you come from a country that was a developing country that was fraught with political and internal war and internal politics. It stabilized there some. You're now here at the most elite system in the world, heading up a part of their organization. I mean, what are you most proud of today, and what an amazing, you know, career you're having?
Well, thank you. That's very kind, Scott. I'm, you know, mostly proud about the path that has, you know, got me here to the point that I can help reshape the way, you know, we're delivering care at Mayo Clinic. And I say that because, you know, quality improvement is ingrained into each one of the specialties, you know, each one of the floors, each one of the departments and divisions that Mayo Clinic has. So the role that I have, you know, as the chair for quality at Mayo Clinic Florida allows me to interact with colleagues and, you know, patients and staff from so many different areas, but being able to get to those areas with a system engineering mindset and knowing, you know, a broad array of quality improvement tools that could be applied, and getting in there with that patient centeredness in mind, and getting in there with the passion to do better. That really keeps me excited. That really gives me purpose every day.
That's fantastic. Let me take a step back and ask you this. You know, big changes in the healthcare system, as you said, it may not be as clearly stratified as it was in your, you know, home country of Panama originally, but it still is one where access is very different based on socioeconomic status, based on where people live, based on whether they're, you know, how wealthy they are or how not wealthy they are. I mean, great, great system, but still an imperfect system with different kinds of access challenges, and quality challenges come with access challenges. What advice do you have for healthcare leaders?
Well, we are I'm going to call it industry because, and I'm not such a fan, okay, of that consideration, but the most common terminology used for healthcare is to say, you know, healthcare is an industry. If you conceptualize it as such, I think the biggest challenge is that healthcare as an industry has not been very well designed. We've just been doing some of the same things for many, many years, and that industry is ripe for disruption, and we have to be ready as healthcare leaders to understand that healthcare is going to be disrupted in the near future. It's already starting to be disrupted by technology. And the way we learned medicine and the way medicine is still being taught is not preparing the providers for these future disruptions that medicine is going to have, the role that technology is going to have. And if we don't pay attention to that, it could be very damaging to, you know, our healthcare systems and our patients. You know, if you think about other industries that have been heavily disrupted, you know, the taxi industry by Uber, the hotel industry by Airbnb. So, you know, there are companies, particularly technology companies out there, that they're trying to, you know, get into the healthcare space. And unfortunately, they have good intentions, but I think, like any other company, they're also coming at it from the angle of profit. And I think if you are really truthful to healthcare, it shouldn't be about money. It shouldn't be about the bottom line. It should be about what is the right thing to do for our patients. And I think, you know, if we don't prepare our hospitals to that disruption that is coming, we may end up in a worse situation where we are, in which access would be even more compartmentalized, and patients that may, for example, be needing complex care, they may not even have the availability to get it because they've been boxed into some kind of, you know, insurance program or program that doesn't allow them to get that complex care. So I think as a society, we should take a really big step back and try to think, how do we redesign the healthcare delivery systems of the future, in which they are technology-based. They are based on our best available data and our best available medications, our best available technology, but they're designed with the patient-centeredness in mind and not with the bottom line in mind.
Well, thank you. And there's so many things that resonate with that. I mean, it's taking the dollars aside, you have residents in different specialties, some being trained on surgical robots, some not being trained on surgical robots. You have residencies in oncology, some learning all about new kinds of immunotherapies and vaccines, some not. And you have this great divide in a country where there's already shortages of providers and specialists. If the teaching and the education doesn't keep up with some of this technology and trends, then you're doing exactly what you're talking about. You're going to exacerbate and make worse some of our shortages, because you have people that are trained to do certain things, people that aren't trained to do certain things. And if they're not trained to use the technology well, they're going to be less and less effective and efficient. So it's a fascinating perspective you offer. And I hope I've summarized some of that well.
Yes, I think you definitely, you know, hit that in the head. I think as we are preparing, you know, the new generations of providers, we have to help them get ready for the technological disruption. We have to help them get ready with, you know, certain technologies that should be included. But that also means, to some extent, to, you know, limit some training to individuals that really are just going to be that subspecialized, in the sense that, for example, nowadays, if somebody wants to do, you know, neurosurgery, for example, you're talking about 9-10 years of training that individual has to go through, and that's a lot of investment that occurs to get that individual there. But to get medicine right, yes, you need neurosurgeons, but you mostly need a much more population-based healthcare system. You need more primary care providers. And, you know, a lot of times there could be things done with technology and with, for example, physician assistants or nurse practitioners, in which you could design a system with a much more broad base of primary care-based or population management-based care that could, in the long run, help decrease the overall cost of healthcare delivery if you design it well.
I mean, 100%, a more population-based approach, more assistance, more extenders, more all kinds of things to manage patients, because our population is growing and growing quickly and getting older. And at the same time, I would argue that you need to make it a little bit easier to become a specialist, because as much as you need more people to treat the larger populations, you also need more people that are well-trained to perform these specialties if you want to do well in specialties as well, or if you want them to actually be taken care of. Because as you said, if it's 9-10 years to become a specialist in a certain area, there's not enough people that want to do that. And so you got to figure out ways, is there ways to expedite that training without really losing much? So I think both approaches need to be taken into account. Well, Dr. Moreno Franco, I want to thank you for everything you do. I want to thank you for joining us today. What a pleasure to get a chance to visit with you. Just fantastic. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate your time and appreciate the invitation. I certainly hope that as we continue to perfect healthcare delivery systems, that we are very mindful. We should be very mindful about quality improvement tools, having the right metrics that are patient-centric, so that we can adjust the way the healthcare system works to the betterment of our society and our people.
And sort of like you said, and sort of like Mayo focuses on, if every single thing is focused on what's best for the patient and keeping the patient at the center of care, well, that's a magnificent place to focus and to start.
It certainly is. And, you know, it is also like William Mayo said in 1914, the best interest of the patient is the only interest to be considered, but for doing so, a union of the forces will be required. And when he spoke about a union of the forces, he was talking about different forces at that time. You know, in 1914, it was about teamwork and collaboration. But in this day and age, it also means other industries. You know, how do you bring technology? How do you bring communication? How do you bring big data? How do you bring robotics? How do you bring the Internet of Things? So that union of the different forces that are out there for the betterment of the patient will be required till 2024 and beyond, you know?
Well, thank you very much. I'm old enough that I was around when William Mayo made those discussions and had those discussions. You were younger than me, so weren't there, but I was there. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not that old. But it's just a total pleasure to visit with you, and I'm dating myself, but just a pleasure to visit you, Doctor. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, Scott. I appreciate your time. All the best for you and for our audience.